I just wanted to, you know, I'm calling this meeting to order at 10:30, and we still have a gavel. First thing on the agenda is to pass the minutes. And so, Representative Anderson, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes? And if so, do I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I make that motion.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the minutes. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, first on the agenda, we have House File 1653. Welcome, Representative Coulter. Would you like to move your House File?
I would love to move my House File.
Okay. Representative Coulter moves that House File 1653 be laid over for possible inclusion into the Property Tax Division report. Please describe your bill. There is an amendment. Would you like to present your bill, or would you like to do the amendment first?
Why don't we do the amendment first? Just get it out of the way here.
Would you like to describe your amendment?
Yeah. So this is I can move the A1 amendment, and this is purely a technical amendment. This just updates the numbers in the bill to reflect the most recent budget forecast. This is my understanding. This is something that's traditionally done shortly after February forecasts, and much like Fiddler on the Roof, we're opening with tradition.
Okay. Is there any questions, comments regarding the bill? If not, Representative Coulter moves the amendment, and it is approved. Are all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. I forgot to say aye, too, so don't feel bad. All right. Representative Coulter, please present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So first of all, I want to thank my co-authors, some of whom are, or at least one of whom is in this room, Chair Gomez. And I also want to thank now Commissioner Marquardt. This bill was part of a package that he originally carried last year and was actually included in the tax bill agreement last year as well. So we've spent a lot of time in this committee talking about, how the need for local governments to continue providing services has really taken a pretty significant toll on residential property taxpayers, and also obviously the tools that we have at our disposal to address that. And we also know obviously that housing prices are through the roof, which combined sort of with the economic challenges that resulted from the need to address the pandemic have had extremely disparate impacts on residential properties. And I actually pulled up the assessment report from my hometown, from the city of Bloomington. And from 2021 to 2022, commercial properties in Bloomington saw a 7% value increase. Single family residential saw a 17% increase, and apartments saw a 22% increase. And that really is sort of the genesis of why I am bringing forward House File 1653. Because as we sort of think about the impact of property taxes, and particularly the impact on those who can least afford it, renters really have been among the hardest hit. Obviously, enter the renter's credit. And I know all of you know this already, but the renter's credit basically works to refund a certain percentage of income assumed to be paid in property taxes to renters. As incomes get higher, the maximum refund decreases, the percentage of income and the copay increase. In 2020, around 305,000 Minnesotans received an average renter's credit refund of about $700. The challenge, of course, is that renters don't pay property taxes the same way that homeowners do. And I actually had to confirm this because it's been a few years since I've been a renter, but renters don't get truth in taxation notices in the mail reminding them to fill out their M1 PR or, you know, to go to their local truth and taxation hearing. So we know that a lot of renters, folks who are entitled to be getting money back in their pockets, aren't. And in fact, another sort of anecdote here, I was talking about this bill with my wife, who obviously was terribly interested in it. And she's, you know, educated person, and I can assure you, very careful about spending. And she mentioned that in the 7 or so years that she was a renter, she remembered applying for the renter's credit maybe once or twice. So House File 1653 would convert the renter's credit from a state paid property tax refund into an income tax credit. This would mean that renters wouldn't need to fill out another form, and depending on how the department structures it, may not even need to put a different, another line item on their income tax return. In other words, this would basically make it automatic. And the result would be that approximately 119,000 renters, people who qualify but don't currently apply, would get money back in their pockets. And the other substantial piece of House File 1653 is that it also changes the definition of income to the federal definition of adjusted gross income, with the effect of that being that an additional 33,000 renters who don't currently qualify would. So those of you who can do the math know that that's approximately 152,000 renters who would now be getting this additional credit. You should have a handout in your packet detailing who currently receives the renter's credit, but I think it is worth pointing out a little bit, excuse me, about who they are. More than 60% have incomes below $40,000 annually, and around 30% are seniors and or folks with disabilities. And I did the math. In 53 counties, that number is higher than 40%, and in 18 counties, that number is higher than 50%. So these are just the folks actually getting the credit now. I don't obviously have the numbers in front of me, but I think it's fair to say that the folks who aren't but could are far more likely to have lower incomes, be seniors and or folks with disabilities and people of color. So I say all of this because, you know, as we're thinking about the changes that we would like to see made to tax policy this year, if we agree that property tax burdens are significant, and I think we do, and that our focus should be putting money in the pockets of folks who need it most, and again, I think we agree on that, this change would get directly at both of those goals in a way that would help a lot of people. So with that, I'm happy to turn it over to my testifiers. I want to introduce the first one because he is a constituent of mine. He's a renter in Bloomington, and his name is Brendan Klein. And I asked Brendan to speak because I think it really is important for us to ground ourselves in the reality of what this would mean for the folks directly impacted, for renters, before we get too deep into the policy side.
Well, thank you, Mr. Klein. If you could come down, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brendan Klein, as stated previously by Representative Coulter. I also thank the committee for allowing me to testify today. As the agenda states, my illustrious qualification is that I'm a renter. So I'll do my best to explain what that's like. I'm speaking in support of the legislation before you today, House File 1653, since, as stated previously, it will increase constituent awareness and, as a result, access to the existing rental credit policy. My hope is to share what that experience and that impact look like for renters like myself. According to Zumper, an organization that analyzes rent trends across large metropolitan areas, the average rent for a one-bed, one-bath apartment right here in St. Paul is $1,288 a month. This data shows to be about an 18% increase just within this last year. Now, in order for an individual to rent in St. Paul, keep rent payments below the recommended 30% of gross income, they would have to earn an annual gross income of $51,520. Yet, the Minnesota Housing Partnership shows that the median income of Minnesota renters is $41,414. I share this to say that, simply put, renters' budgets are being stretched thinner and thinner, which is what the renter credit policy is meant to address. Providing a credit to renters allows more people to have stable shelter and allocate income to other budgetary needs, such as saving for retirement, a home, college, and the other daily needs that life demands. To put in context, a $700 rent credit would be 2 months' worth of groceries for one individual, or 3 months of gas for a car. Things that all Minnesotan renters would willingly put money towards if they knew how to access the renter's credit. The problem is that the additional paperwork required to apply for the renter's credit often goes unfilled due to the lack of awareness. So the opportunity and challenge brought to the committee is this. If this credit is known to have direct benefits to renters, why make it more difficult for them to access this credit? The language in this legislation will make it easier for renters to become aware of this credit and apply for it, The more we can simplify and streamline our complicated tax system, the better. I'll end my testimony by thanking the chair and members of the committee for their attention, and I ask that you pass this legislation to help simplify our tax system and make renting more affordable for the average Minnesotan by increasing awareness of this credit. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Klein. Next up, we have Nan Madden. Please come down, state your name for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today in support of this exciting bill, and I want to thank Representative Coulter for bringing it forward. As you've heard, this bill represents the game-changing renter's credit proposal brought forward by the House last year and included in the 2022 tax agreement, but not yet enacted into law. You've heard from Mr. Klein this morning, and also about 2 weeks ago, you heard from Michael Dahl from Homeline about the difference that the renter's credit makes for folks struggling to afford the basics of daily living and keep up with the rising costs of rent. And you have also our issue brief on the importance of the renter's credit in every part of the state. And just to reiterate, more than 300,000 Minnesota households currently receive the credit. And in greater Minnesota, the credit especially is an important financial lifeline for seniors and people with disabilities. Through income-targeted property tax refunds, the state helps bring down one of the costs of housing and creates a more equitable tax system by refunding a portion of the property taxes that qualifying renters have paid through their rent. It's not only a financial boost to the Minnesotans who receive it, but also a multiplier effect through their local communities when renters spend their refunds on rent, groceries, or other basics. Just to reiterate again, the proposal makes two important changes. First, changing the income definition used to qualify for and calculate the renter's credit, changing from the complex household income measure to the more common adjusted gross income, and then converting the renter's credit into a refundable tax credit that people would file for as part of the income tax system instead of the separate application process later in the year. The high impact result of this bill would come from both of those changes. So by putting it on the income tax form, nearly 120,000 Minnesota households are expected to begin receiving the credit. These are folks who already qualify but are facing barriers to navigating the process, and the dollars would get into renters' pockets sooner. By changing to adjusted gross income, like many other provisions of our tax code, it'll be simpler for Minnesotans to apply for and for the department to administer. About half of the currently eligible households would qualify for larger refunds than they do now. An additional 33,000 would become eligible. All of these game-changing outcomes would occur while still maintaining the important sliding scale structure of the renter's credit that prioritizes the lowest income Minnesotans and the folks who are struggling the most to make ends meet. And because there's a one-time cost in the first year it goes into effect to make this transition, this is a good use for some of the one-time dollars that are a part of the 24-25 budget surplus. We're very excited about this proposal. Many of our community partners are as well. We also look forward to talking with the bill author, talking with the committee more about potential outreach and education efforts that might go along with this change. To minimize any unintended negative consequences on Minnesota renters who are used to receiving or used to applying and receiving these resources in the fall. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Finally, we have Mr. Valenzuela. You could come down to the podium, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Good morning. I'm Alejandro Valenzuela. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for having me here this morning. I'm here to support the House File 1653. My name is Alejandro Valenzuela. I'm a Tax Financial Services Director at Prepare and Prosper, working for the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program. I've worked with our organization for the past four tax seasons. We're in the middle of the fifth season right now, so it's pretty busy. Over that time, I have had the honor to work with thousands of low-income families, and that, you know, low to low-moderate taxpayers, and hundreds of volunteers each year. It is core to PNP's mission to assist Minnesota taxpayers with filing an accurate tax return and claiming the correct tax benefits and credits that they are eligible for. I and my staff are greatly appreciate the simplification and expansion of the renter's credit. My primary reason for testifying today is to support the simplifying calculations for the renter's credit. This would be more beneficial to our taxpayers at Prepare and Prosper supports. I speak for the majority of our taxpayers when I say I'm extremely supportive of the change in definition of household income to more closely align with the tax filer's adjusted gross income, the AGI. The consistency of using the AGI will greatly decrease the confusion of how the credit is calculated, increase accuracy of return preparation, and minimize any tax return follow-up required by the Department of Revenue. Also, adding this credit onto the state income tax return will deliver the renter's credit filers earlier in the year with a more predictable timeline than the summer distribution of the current refund right now. Shifting the renter's credit to the income tax return also removes administrative barriers to the filers face when preparing their own tax return. Requesting the renter's credit, many tax software vendors require renters to print and mail the M1PR, and many times are charged to print them out and send them in. This extra step can cause taxpayers to miss out the credit because they didn't know the form was needed or needed to be mailed, or cause taxpayers without easy access to printing out then claiming the credit. PNP has surveyed our customers over the past few weeks, and we have learned that overwhelmingly majority would like the renter's credit being combined with the state return and would prefer to receive the renter's credit earlier in the year. Copies of the survey are available, and you can see the sampling of the customer survey that has been provided to you as well. Thank you again to the community for the opportunity to testify today.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify for or against this? Okay, seeing none, member questions, Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to express my gratitude to Representative Coulter for carrying this bill, and I want to give my personal experience with it. So when I was in law school, I got scholarships to cover my law school payment, and I worked at a coffee shop. I would open at a Caribou every morning so that I could afford, like, my cost of living, which wasn't a lot because I would only work, like, 2 or 3 hours in the morning before going to class. And I filed for the renter's credit, not knowing that my scholarships counted as part of my income. And so immediately, you know, like 2 years after I got out of law school, I got these notices being like, you need to pay us all that money back that you got because you had income. And I was like, I really didn't have income. It was a grant that went from the federal government to the school. I never saw any of it. But they were like, that counts as your income, doesn't matter, you are not qualified for this. And so it was, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot, but it was kind of a heavy penalty as I was, like, just coming out of law school and having to pay back thousands of dollars. And so I really appreciate looking at this in, like, a more realistic way because, you know, my household income did not reflect what I was actually receiving. And so that adjusted gross income would make a lot more sense. So I appreciate you bringing this, and I fully support it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anderson. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the bill author. Yeah, this is a good idea, but just have to ask why you wouldn't have also applied this to folks that own their homes. You mentioned that residential property taxpayers are being hit with a 17% increase. And the timing, folks get their property tax statements early in the year, March, April, and that first half is due in May. So this would have really applied well to them as well. So just wondering if it could be expanded to include the homeowners as well.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for an excellent question. And the original proposal that then Representative Marquardt, then Representative Marquardt Carey did include that as well. That obviously that expands the cost of the bill. Certainly, certainly open to that discussion. I think as we move forward, I don't want to speak for the chair, but I'm sure there'd be a willingness to hear a similar bill targeted at homeowners as well. I think it certainly makes sense. I think, for myself, as I will get into here, for me, the particular focus, like I said, was focusing on renters, folks that we know are generally speaking lower income, folks who are more likely to sort of be on the tail ends of the age spectrum, younger folks and older folks. So that was kind of my focus with the bill. But I, certainly open to the discussion about expanding it to homeowners as well.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Well, except for the one-time fiscal year change and when the money would go out, and there may be a few more people that would get it, like with the renter's credit that hadn't gotten it previously, but I don't think it would be a huge increase in cost to the state, except for the one-time juggling to the next fiscal year. So, I'd really like to work beyond that and look at it. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Ms. Schill. I think she can shed some light on the cost. Ms. Schill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson and members, I happen to have the revenue estimate from Representative Marquardt's bill from last year. So these are older numbers, but as Representative Coulter said, his bill contained both the repeal and the shift for the homestead credit state refund and renters. So to add homeowners to this proposal, the first year one-time impact is just under $1.2 billion. And then that would continue going forward and slightly increasing. And the repeal component is about $650 million. So if you do the math, it's roughly $650 million and growing as the net cost to adding homeowners.
Okay, you're good? All right, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if the mics are on this side today.
Yeah.
Are they? Okay. Representative Coulter, I have a question for you about how to deal with kind of a transition glitch in your bill. And that is sometimes in a fiscal year, people may be a homeowner and they may also be a renter. How do you anticipate reconciling that in your bill? Because you would file for both of those at the same time under the current law. How would that be able to be resolved in providing paperwork in a timely fashion for both parties?
Representative Coulter, would you like nonpartisan to answer that?
I can take a stab
at it. Okay, go ahead, take a stab.
Nonpartisan staff probably would get a better stab at it, let's put it that way.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Lisa Lagarde and Representative O'Driscoll, my understanding of how it would work is that presumably you'd file for your renter's credit as part of your income tax form, so it'd probably be a standalone credit form on your income taxes, and then if you're also a homeowner, you'd file kind of a traditional M1 PR property tax refund form separately. So you'd probably have to file separate forms under current law, and as you're probably aware, they're kind of administered on the same form, so you might have an extra piece of paper to file if you're in both those situations, I think, under the bill.
Representative O'Driscoll.
That sheds a light on it that I needed, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any other discussion? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was sort of surprised with the comments that the rental thing impacts seniors and disabled much more. Frankly, what I'm hearing from my community and across the state, our seniors are, they work their whole life to get a home, and now they're retired, have lower income, and they're paying rent to the government for their home in property taxes. And that, they would be surprised and shocked that this bill dropped them out, because frankly, if I look at the all the new revenue reports from the time of the bill you mentioned that had, you know, homeowners included and if not, I think we've steadily had more and more and more and more and more surplus. In fact, some of those times, you know, put a couple of those together, you probably got the magnitude of what the cost is. But so even though we got a greater surplus, we can no longer afford the fine proposal of our former representative. So we got more money, but we can't give. We don't understand that seniors and disabled also sometimes are homeowners. In fact, that's why we have a lot of the code things to get accessibility and help out. I see projects in my district and many communities of where we've got volunteer groups that if somebody had a car accident or for some reason has a disability, that the neighbors come out and build that ramp, help convert that home to be more accessible so they can stay at home, the home that they built, that they've lived in, instead of going to an apartment or a long-term care facility. And I think, if I remember some of the discussions with the former rep that had the bill, that this took part of that bill, it really is better for people to facilitate being independent and living in their homes, to make it more affordable for them to stay in their homes. And, you know, just like it's hard when they can't drive anymore, but when they can no longer sleep in their own beds. And part of the intent of the original bill was allow them to do that. So I guess I'm really surprised that we've got more money, a lot more money, but now we can't afford to do this.
All right. Thank you. So any closing comments, Representative Coulter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to just quickly respond. I don't believe I ever said we couldn't afford to include homeowners in the bill.
Closing comments.
Yeah. All right. I will move on from that. So I guess, you know, just in closing, the reason that I took this bill on originally, to be frank, is because I just get frustrated at the idea that we have these kinds of barriers in place. Renters essentially pay property taxes automatically. It's just included in their rent. But in order to get their refund, and again, this is money that we have said in law that we are in, that these folks are entitled to, we make them take multiple extra steps, even more if their landlord isn't proactive on their CRP. I won't use the term that I normally do because we're in flight company, but frankly, I think that's silly. The larger point, though, is that we've heard a lot of talk this session about how best to get money back in Minnesotans' pockets, and particularly about helping folks who make less money and seniors. I think everyone in this committee is focused on where we can do the most good this year. And I'm certainly not going to pretend that this is not a significant investment, but I think it's one that I would be hard-pressed to find anyone who would say it's a bad one.
Well, thank you, Representative Coulter. Representative Coulter renews his motion that House File 1653, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. It's laid over. Next up, we do have a senior bill. It is House File 1727. Welcome to the committee, Representative. So the chair moves that House File 1727 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. I'm pleased to welcome Representative Wolgamott to the committee.
Well, Chair Liz Lagarde, I am so pleased to be back here in your Property Tax Committee, and members, I'm here to present House File 1727, which is a bill to expand.
Would you like me to offer the amendment before, or would you like to present your bill?
Go ahead and offer it, Mr. Chair.
All right. So I will move that the A1 author's amendment, will you describe that amendment, please?
Mr. Chair, that is simply getting the bill in the shape that I want it. We are just changing some numbers, and I can go ahead and explain that now, or?
No.
Okay.
All right. Any discussion? All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Please continue.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for supporting that amendment. I am here today to present House File 1727, which is a bill to expand the Senior Property Tax Deferral Program. And, Mr. Chair, I will explain to you and the members what this program currently does, and then I'll explain what this bill would do to change it. So the current Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program allows seniors to defer a portion of their property taxes until a later time. It is available to seniors who are age 65 and older, who have a total household income of $60,000 or less, or have owned and occupied their home as a homestead for at least 15 years. Once they stop participating in the program, participants pay back the deferred taxes. Really, to get in the weeds of how it works, Mr. Chair and members, the property tax that's paid is 3% of total household income based on the prior year income, and then the state comes in and pays the remainder as a loan. Currently, in fiscal year 2020, there were 309 active participants in the program. Now, that's great, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy for those people who qualified, but I don't think it's enough. I'm hearing from my constituents in St. Cloud, and I know we're hearing throughout the state, that seniors are facing a tough time with rising costs and inflation. Property taxes are increasing, but incomes are remaining fixed. So that's why I'm putting this bill forward, Mr. Chair and members. It increases the household income limit for the Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program from $60,000 to $96,000. And it also reduces from 15 to 5 the minimum number of years the homeowner must own and occupy the property in order to qualify. There is a revenue impact. It is said to be for fiscal year 24 and 25, $260,000, and for fiscal year 26 and 27, $1.3 million. That's the background, and those are the changes that this bill is hoping to make. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions from you or any of the committee members.
Okay, thank you. There is no testifier signed up. Does anybody want to testify from the public? Seeing none, member questions. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wilgamont. I see that, quick questions here. There is no interest on this loan that the state will be giving, is that correct?
Representative Wilgamont.
Thank you, Chair Litzigard, and thank you for that question, Representative Hewitt. The interest rate varies, but it does not exceed 5%.
Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wilgamont, this is a great program. As I'm hearing from others around the state right now about how they're forced to take out terrible loans from payday lenders or go into reverse mortgage situations just to stay in their home, and this is a great bill. Thanks for bringing it.
Any other member discussion? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hewitt, appreciate your support of homeowners. And maybe we can almost refer back to the bill we just talked about and helping those folks out with some of the speeding up of their tax returns as, and property tax returns as well. Representative Wilgamont, can you help the committee to understand on line 1.19, you're reducing from 15 years to 5 years. The question I have is not specifically that, but does that have to be residing in the same property, or can that be, in essence, tagged or chained together with a homestead filing for a period of 5 years?
Would you like House research?
That would be, I think, be able to get Representative O'Driscoll the most thorough answer to his question, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, the requirements for homesteading the property apply specifically to the property for which the deferral of property taxes is sought. So it would have to be the actual property that you're living in when you are seeking to join or participate in this program. So it has to be the same house.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And As we've heard discussed here today, and my colleague Representative Kwan brought up, that sometimes homeowners are disabled and they may end up having to vacate one property because it's not logistically conducive for them to be able to be in that property, and they may buy a different property which may have a higher value or the same value, and they would lose the benefit of this. Have you anticipated how you might want to help those folks out since you're opening this part of statute?
Representative Wagama.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. I think that's an excellent point, and you know, as this bill continues to make its way through the process, I would be really honored to work with you on expanding that eligibility. So thank you for bringing that up, and I think this is something that we should work on going forward. Absolutely. Great point. Thank you.
Any follow-up? Any other member discussion? Seeing none, any closing comments?
Well, thank you again, Chair Lissigard and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 1727. Our current senior citizens property tax deferral program, it's a great program. It's making a difference in the lives of seniors in Minnesota. Let's build off of that. Let's expand that. Let's help keep seniors in their homes. I urge your full consideration for House File 1727. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, committee members.
Thank you. Chair renews his motion that House File 1727, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. So next up, House File 1640, Representative Cha. Welcome. The chair moves that House File 1640 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Welcome to the committee. Representative Shaw, please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Lissigard, and members for hearing File 1640 today. House File 1640 allows the City of Woodbury to use a portion of the local lodging tax for capital projects that serve region and statewide visitors to the state, to the City of Woodbury. Under current law, cities may impose a local lodging tax up to 3% without legislation approval. This bill would allow the City of Woodbury to dedicate two-thirds of the proceeds derived from its lodging tax for capital improvements to public recreational facilities. As you know, a number of cities have been granted this flexibility for their capital projects, and Woodbury is seeking the same approval. Chair Lissigard, I would like to yield my time to my testifier from the City of Woodbury, Angela Gorell.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for allowing the City of Woodbury to come before you today. My name is Angela Gorell, and I'm the Assistant City Administrator for the City of Woodbury. I'd like to begin by thanking Representative Cha for his support and leadership in assisting the City of Woodbury to bring the bill forward to allow us flexibility on a portion of our lodging tax for special uses. Knowing your time is tight, let me provide three brief reasons why we are before you today on these lodging tax modifications. First, regional overburden. As the economic hub of the East Metro, Woodbury is a regional destination, not only for economic amenities like retail, entertainment, and dining, but also a recreational destination in the region that brings visitors to our city. Our hope is that with funding from the local lodging tax, the city can continue to add to and enhance our recreational offerings as local and regional needs and desires change. Woodbury is now the eighth largest city in the state with 80 plus population. We are the largest city in Washington County with over one quarter of property valuation, jobs, and population. And we're the East Gateway to the state of Minnesota. Our recreational facilities are crucial to support our large regional presence in the whole East Metro. Secondly, local control and city council decision making. Last year, we did enact a 3% local lodging tax as allowed by State Statute 469. However, as you may know, the lodging tax may only be used for marketing and promoting the city as a tourist and convention center as allowed by law. We are asking for reasonable accommodation to use up to 2% of the lodging tax to be directed for capital improvements for recreational facilities that we would then directly promote and market. And finally, precedents. We are aware that this type of request has been granted for other public entities and for similar facilities. The legislature has allowed various cities to use the local lodging tax for community festivals, park and recreation facilities, a marina, an emergency response training facility, sports arena, downtown improvements, civic centers, and retail facilities. This requested tax policy ensures that our local government has a real choice in financing our recreational facility improvements and does not pay for the overburden of providing regional recreation facilities. This is not a new tax policy and costs the state of Minnesota nothing. Other cities have been granted this authority and include, but are not limited to, Marshall, Winona, Brooklyn Center, Plymouth, Bloomington, Rochester, Minneapolis, Duluth, and St. Paul. In closing, House File 1640 would allow Woodbury to use a portion of its lodging tax for specific purposes that will result in benefits to both residents and businesses of the city of Woodbury and to the regional non-resident visitors that we have. This funding flexibility supports the principle of local control and is consistent with past tax policy precedents provided to other cities. Therefore, on behalf of the City of Woodbury, I humbly ask you to consider allowing our City Council the flexibility to use up to 2% of our lodging tax for improvements to our recreational facilities. I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. We do have Tony Quillis. You could come to the podium, state your name for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tony Quillis. I'm representing Hospitality Minnesota and the Minnesota Association of Convention and Visitors Bureau. And thank you for the time to make some comments on House File 1640. And I'd like to start off by thanking Representative Chaw for taking the time to listen to my concerns the other day, albeit a brief time that we had together, but we did have a conversation about this, Mr. Chairman. This is going to be very similar to what we talked about when we talked about the city of Plymouth, Mr. Chairman. Cities right now have the authority to go up to 3% as long as 95% of that is used for marketing and promotion. We consistently and vigorously protect this statute for local lodging tax for its intended use. Lodging facilities agree to this tax to be able to use marketing and promotion, what I say, to put heads in beds. The only reason cities come to the legislature is to go above that 3% or use it something other than marketing and promotion. And for capital improvements, we've had a long-standing opposition for using the lodging tax for capital improvements. We think there are other options such as local sales and use taxes, property taxes, or bonding proposals. Mr. Chairman, the history on this one goes back all the way to 2017. The city of Woodbury came in, asked for 2% on top of the 3 that they could have, and then to use it all for capital expenses, specifically for the renovation of Central Park. They subsequently came back in 2019 and 20 and 21 and 22, asked to go 3% above they could use under statute, and then to use 2/3 of that for capital improvements and 1/3 for marketing and promotion. The legislature did not move any of those proposals all the way back to 2017 to now approve any of those previous requests. Subsequently, under 469, as the assistant city manager mentioned, under 169.190, the city of Woodbury, as they're allowed to do, went and enacted the local lodging tax, 3% to be used for marketing and promotion. And that collection is going to be starting on April 1st of this year. So they haven't even started collecting it yet. And now the legislation, Mr. Chairman, to come through and use that 2/3 for capital improvements and then marketing and promotion for 1/3. We just think, Mr. Chairman, that there are other options available out there for these capital improvements. City of Woodbury right now has a bonding proposal for $15 million out there right now. There's some proposed TIF changes for the city to move around these issue areas. So think in partnership with Washington County, I think there are other funding available options there, Mr. Chairman. And so the previous cities, I'd also like to wrap up by saying those previous cities that were mentioned were either grandfathered in for their lodging taxes under 1972 and a couple other subsequent changes, or also are used for major economic development projects. The Minneapolis Civic Center, the Target Center, XL Energy Center, the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center. So they're tied to usually major economic development projects, and the lodging folks have been involved in those conversations. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time. I really appreciate it. And thanks again to Senator, or Representative, I almost made you a senator. Representative Chaw, his time in discussing this with me, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Anyone else? Seeing none, member questions. Representative Garofalo.
Well, I was going to say, in absence of Representative Gomez, I would just remind members of the committee of what her statement was when we had the Plymouth sales tax discussion, but she just walked in, so it's a little bit awkward. So.
Nothing else? Okay. Well, you're right, that was awkward. Representative Quam.
I think it's appropriate that the chair would recognize the chair to his left if she had any comments.
I didn't seek recognition, Mr. Chair, but thank you.
Okay, so a whole lot of awkwardness and recognition going on here. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have concerns with opening the gate with sort of a semi-precedence of that I think this would allow. You know, frankly, if there's targeted and related reasons and they're granted this tax, you know, frankly, I would have thought that they would actually have had this discussion when they asked for starting this, especially since they haven't even apparently collected a dollar and they're already changing what they want to spend it on. You know, I think the original intent when they came forward should be honored for at least a period of time before they start looking at other ways of utilizing the funds. So that's just my feeling.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Sorry, I know I'm out of place here.
No, you're not out of place. It's just like
real quickly, I am concerned with our cities right now as far as like the city of Woodbury, who actually runs their own fire department, runs their own ambulance, runs their own police department. The amount of for a fire truck is $1.8 million now, where it used to be $200,000. An ambulance is $500,000. These are all things that the city is going to have to pay for out of other pockets, and they're looking for every way possible to keep the revenue coming into the city. I know I referee at many of their facilities out there, and I know that they're getting tired, and I think this is probably one of the options we have to look at as a committee. So I just wanted to put that 2 cents in. I'm sorry I spoke after the lead, and I feel bad. I'll shut up.
Any other further discussion? Closing comments.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Lazzagard, and Minority Leader Quam, and Representative Hill for your comments. I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill before you, and hopefully can provide some relief for the city of Woodbury so we can continue to prosper. Thank you.
Thank you. So the chair renews his motion that House File 1640 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. House File 1640 is now laid over. Nice job. Thank you. Yeah. Next up is House File 1721, Vice Chair Lee. Welcome. Representative Lee, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move to possibly include House File 1721 in our division report.
Representative Lee moves that House File 1721 be laid over for possible inclusion into the Property Tax Division report. Welcome, and please present your bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd also like to thank Lee Quam and Representative Odiskrill for co-authoring House File 1721 with me, along with our DFL colleagues. I'd also like to thank the Association of Minnesota Counties, which I think, yes, are here today, as well as the Minnesota Association of County Officers for their help and support on this bill. As we've heard throughout committee and also door knocking last summer, many of our constituents are really concerned about the recent rise in property taxes. And I know you, Mr. Chair, have a great bill to increase local and county aid to alleviate some of this pressure, but this bill seeks to add another tool to our toolbox so that we can keep families in their homes and in their communities. Specifically, House File 1721 would help homeowners facing tax forfeiture stay in their homes by eliminating the interest rate minimum of 10% that is assessed on delinquent property taxes. The problem across the board is that our counties are seeing struggling families who come to them with the ability to repay their back taxes, but not quite the interest, because the rate is so high. This bill eliminates the 10% floor and sets the interest rate to the prime rate with a 14% cap. Another part of the bill reflects a recommendation from the partners I mentioned earlier, which gives counties the flexibility to establish an annual rate set lower than what's set by the Department of Revenue so that they can use discretion to allow families to stay in their homes. And since we're limited in time, I'm going to yield the rest of my time to Mr. Ron Elwood, who is my witness today.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. And I'll just add a couple of quick amplifying comments. This is affecting certainly Legal Aid's clients. We have had a number of folks who may have been able to increase their or pay back and their taxes and repurchase their homes, but for the high interest rate that keeps moving up. And I'll just note that this interest rate, this floor was established in 1990, regardless of what the index rate was that is set every year by the Department of Revenue. And I'll just note that it hasn't hit 10% since November of 1990. And although, of course, interest rates are higher now than they've been in recent years, they're still not at that rate. And anyway, what would be what's the point of making it a floor when it should just be the index rate? So thank you, members, for hearing the bill, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this forward.
Thank you so much. Anyone else would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, member questions. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure if this, I know that, well, I shouldn't say that. I'm presuming that Representative Lee doesn't know the answer to this question. If she does, I'd be happy to defer to her, but I think I'm going to start with House staff. Is this interest rate subject to Minnesota's usury laws established by the Department of Commerce? Do we know?
Mr. Cope.
I would have to check and get back to you, Representative O'Driscoll.
Just out of curiosity, because and those rates are typically higher, and it governs interest rates on consumer loans and credit cards and all those kinds of things. I'm just wanting to make sure that if we're going to be addressing this, that we take into account usury on this, so we don't have a statute bumping against each other in the state of Minnesota here. So,
point well taken, Representative Lee.
Oh, I think Mr. Elwood can answer.
Mr. Elwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative O'Driscoll, my understanding is that the usury law is superseded by any statute that creates a different rate. So, for example, our credit card rates in Minnesota are 33% maximum, and that's way above the 6 or 8% usury rate. And so anytime the legislature creates a separate statute, that overrides the 6% usury rate or 8% in writing. That's my understanding.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Elwood, you've now sparked another question here.
I'm sorry.
So no apologies necessary. But the maximum that we're anticipating is a 14% rating here. So if for some reason that rates on this type of financing or interest penalty, you know, usury, I should say interest for the use of this benefit is at 10%, but a local community is charging 11%, because this is what it gives the counties the ability to, in the bill, charge what they want to. As I understand the language in the bill, that it's not the Department of Revenue, they can charge less than what the Department of Revenue is looking at. Just wanting to make sure that, again, that we don't have any issues with that, because we're kind of uncoupling that a little bit from what we've had in statute in the past.
Representative Lee or Mr. Elwood?
I'll let Mr. Elwood answer, and then I'll close. I'll follow up with
Mr. Chair and Representative Driscoll, yes, this came from the Association of Minnesota Counties. It's something they wanted, to be able to make it easier for people to repurchase their homes, and so it would be a lower rate than whatever the indexed rate is, but it would cover the same. It would be in the same category if the legislature authorizes a rate different from usury, then they're not in conflict, and that would be fine.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Odesko, I mean, I would just say, you know, we are legislators. We're here to do good work for the people, and I think the historical context is that our body set this rate in 1990 after seeing rates as high as 20% in the 80s, and so, you know, we're here to legislate, and if there are things that interact, you know, I would defer to House Research to help us figure that out, because this bill will be laid over. I think the other piece is, the context for the county's discretion to set lower rates is that, you know, I know you've talked about this too. There are folks who are struggling to pay their property taxes, and so we have actually stories. There are really real people who are impacted by this, folks who would have been able to stay in their homes but for the high interest rate. And so we're just trying to, you know, write this historical relic because interest rates are so low.
Representative Driscoll.
And Mr. Chair, I just want to remind the committee and those that are listening, both Representative Quam and I are co-authors of this bill. I'm just asking questions to make sure when my name is on legislation that I've thought about all the things that are necessary, because I don't want to be held accountable for missing something.
Point well taken. Mm-hmm. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Either, first of all, good bill. Either Representative Lee or Mr. Elwood. So this still allows a 14% rate, which seems to me excessive. Is there any openness to striking the 14% cap and having it be a lower percent going forward?
Representative Lee.
I'm going to defer to Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, I mean, obviously from a, you know, our standpoint, the lower the better. I mean, the bottom line, I think, in this bill is that the Department of Revenue sets the indexed rate based on the prime rate. And so if the prime rate happened to jump to, you know, 15%, this would at least make it a cap of 14. Obviously, we can't foresee the future, but it seems odd that to me that in the foreseeable future we'd ever get there. But to the extent that you'd like to make a cap lower, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to, complain about it, making it easier for the easiest possible for homeowners to repurchase their homes if they're in tax forfeiture, save their homes, and save the counties a lot of headache. Yeah.
So, Representative McGraw.
Mr. Chairman, and either again for Representative Lee or Mr. Elwood, are there any counties that are charging over 10% right now? Do we know that?
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, the law states that whatever the interest rate, if it's below 10, it has to be 10. So my understanding is every county is charging that, because that's the law.
Well, is anyone, I'm sorry,
Representative Garofalo,
is anyone charging above 10? Because it looks like they have the discretion right now to go from 10 to 14. Right now, don't they?
Mr. L.
No, okay, I misunderstood them.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, the law is basically the Department of Revenue sets the index rate. So, you know, since it's been way below 14 and 10, it would be, let's say it's 7 this year. The counties are required by this law to charge 10, even though it's the index rate is 7. They can't go above it.
I misunderstood the statute. I'm sorry. So I thought counties had the discretion to go between 10 and 14, but they don't. So, Representative Lee, I may try to talk with you afterwards. If something that interests you, we can't foresee the future interest rate environment, but 14% does seem excessive, particularly in this situation. So I'll talk with you offline. I hope you're interested in doing that. Well, thanks.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, over the last decade or so since the Great Recession, you know, with Minnesota cities and counties all pretty much having either AA or AAA credit ratings, the borrowing costs have been extremely low. And I guess I can't imagine that, you know, cities and counties and school districts want to keep people in their homes. They want stability in their communities. The main question I have is, why didn't we do this years ago?
Representative Lee.
I think this proposal has been included in previous agreements. We just didn't have a tax bill last session. Yeah. So, I mean, let's make sure we pass a tax bill this session.
Any follow-up, Representative Elkins?
No, thank you.
Any other? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're talking about this bill being used to help people buy back their homes again, which is laudable. But it was also impact anybody who is buying tax forfeited property, correct?
Representative Lee?
Yes.
Any further discussion? Closing comments?
Sure. I mean, it's a good bill. I appreciate the discussion. And, you know, to Representative Graffalo's point, I mean, I think we wanted to set a rate that was fair. So, you know, open to discussions because, again, the bill will be laid over. We haven't seen the prime rate, right, go beyond 10% since the 90s. I think 14 is just there as a cap. So I think for us, it's open for discussion. And with that, you know, we just want to make sure that we keep people in their homes. And so I thank Mr. Elwood and Legal Aid for their help on this bill and ask that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion in our division report.
Okay. Representative Lee moves that House File 1721 be laid over for possible inclusion in the property tax division report. The bill is so moved, laid over. Thank you. Okay, next up, drum roll please. We have House File 124, Representative Scrabble. Welcome to the committee.
Oh.
That a boy.
Please help yourself.
Yes.
Just pass it over.
Yeah.
You got to pass it over.
You want to, yeah.
I was told to bring a treat. Yeah.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Quam,
I know that the prices have inflated, but I believe any of these single items is below the $5.
Good point.
Mr. Chairman, we can dispense with the formalities of hearing this bill.
Representative Scraba, do you see how things work around here? Huh?
So the big bill, I'll bring walleye and pizza.
There you go. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome you to the committee, and the chair moves that House File 124 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Please state your name for the record, Representative Scraba, and continue with this wonderful bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Roger Scraba. I'm from Ely, Minnesota. I'm the representative for the district. I want to thank you all for hearing this bill today. This bill is for Cook County. It's a renewal of its original 3% lodging tax. There's a 1% additional tax, and they're asking for another 15 years. Mr. Chair, the lodging taxes above, as you know, the above 3% require legislative approval, hence we're here. The tax was added in 2008 and expires in this year of November. We are asking for a renewal this year for continuity of programming and budgeting. This bill was before the committee last year, like Representative Lee. It would be nice to pass a tax bill in conference committee report. The additional 1% tax is targeted to promote local events and programming. As you all know, tourism is the top industry in Cook County. Visit Cook County's work is the cornerstone to economic well-being of the community. We appreciate the committee's support, and I want to introduce Linda, and she will fill in all the voids you guys need.
Well, thank you, Representative Scraba. We're not paying attention to you, but
I'm glad you're not.
We're just passing the food. Please, well, state your name for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Linda Jurek. I am the executive director of Visit Cook County. We're the destination marketing organization for northeastern Minnesota. And most recently, I am the executive director of the Cook County Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for hearing me today. Like I said, Visit Cook County is the destination marketing organization. We are located in northeastern Minnesota. I hope you have all had a chance to visit us. Our business of Visit Cook County truly unites Cook County tourism, and we have that cornerstone of the state. As is customary for DMOs or visitor bureaus, our marketing and branding initiatives are funded by that collection of lodging tax under statute 469.190 that you've heard a little bit about today. 95% of that collection is used in marketing and promotion. In 2008, we do not have an event center. We are not that large, but we did enact an additional 1% so we could support our local events and programming that directly relate to tourism. That's why we're here today. If it expires, it would expire in November of 23. We're looking for an additional 15 years. In 2008, when this was enacted, three tourism associations came together. Those include Grand Marais Area Tourism, Lutzentafte Schroeder, and Gunflint Trail Tourism Associations. They adopted this 1% and then subsequently came together and created Visit Cook County. So we collectively work on our 3% marketing together as a group. This renewal is supported by every lodging partner. It's supported by every tourism association. Of course, supported by the board of Visit Cook County as well as the county commissioners. And when I bring in the county commissioners, there is oversight at the county level by our commissioner body. Every year, we go before the county commissioners and we present our budget, which supports the events and programming, and they subsequently approve that budget. So there's oversight every year, and we have had approval for the renewal by the county commissioners twice now without the bonding being passed last year. So like I said, every year there's an analysis. We look at that 1% use. And like I said, we don't have a large event center, but we have many, many partnering organizations. And I just wanted to highlight a few of the things that we do support and organizations that we do support with our 1% collection. In the last 14 years, we've spent over $55,000 supporting our artists and galleries. Side note on that, per capita, Cook County is the third largest in the state. Supporting artists, only following Minneapolis and St. Paul, so very critical to that need. We support over 300,000 to some local not-for-profits, including widely known North House Folk School, the Grand Marais Art Colony, WTIP Community Radio, and Cook County Historical Society. We are a very culturally based area. 320,000 has been earmarked for biking events. So when you think of the Lutzen 99er and its tremendous growth in the last 10 years, that growth of just that event alone has grown visitorship and lodging tax by over 156% in the month of June alone. So we're really always directing our events and programming and that 1% use to grow that shoulder season traffic because we are dominantly tourism economy. And last but not least, $650,000 has gone to support our local musicians, of which is almost a subset of our economy with the numbers of musicians that work in our area. We estimate that over 40,000 visitors come to Cook County annually with just 10 marquee events alone. So why during this bonding session, if we do not get renewal of the 1%, it will expire in November of 23, and we will be left with a gaping hole of nearly $900,000 that supports our local economy when it comes to tourism, events, and programming. Mr. Chair and committee members, I am happy to take any questions.
Well, thank you so much. Anyone else would like to testify? Seeing none, member questions? Representative Quam.
I'm sorry.
Okay. You guys want to fight over it? Okay. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I was trying to figure out how this glaring exception in law actually occurred, and I was trying to remember. Do you remember who the Senate tax chair was in 2001?
No, I'm from the range. I don't remember. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little confused. So this bill doesn't change where the money's spent. This bill doesn't increase the money. You're just saying after waiting over a decade that you want to continue doing something because it works. So I'm not finding any gimmicks or anything. I'm finding a good idea, and it's refreshing to see that, especially with the cooperation of local entities, and I'm glad to see something's working. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scraba, question for you. In the executive director's overview of the bill, she mentioned that there are many different opportunities for performing arts to take place in that in the Cook County venue. Are you a part of that performing arts group, or
Representative Scraba?
The only thing I perform is in the back of a canoe guiding, and it is not in that area, in that district. But
Representative O'Driscoll.
I am not a member of the performing arts of Cook County.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Scraba, as a result of the change in legislation, would you be entertaining a change in the recreational and other activities that you'd be involved with in your district? Or?
Representative Scraba.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll. The WTIP, the radio station that is funded from here, I plan on sitting down. We're trying to work out a radio time where I can be on the radio once a month or once a week, whatever we decide, to inform the people of Cook County what's going on down here.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And none of that would involve any singing or storytelling or of things of that nature, Representative?
Representative Scraba.
Chairman, Representative, no.
And final thought, Representative Scraba, thank you for observing the freshman rule of when you make your first committee appearance. This does happen sometimes, and sometimes the hazing can come from either side or both sides of the aisle on this. And, Mr. Chair, for the record, I would note that we maybe have some freshmen that are delinquent in their duty. So we do have several other committee meetings that will be transpiring, and I would ask the Chair to please enforce the rules.
That point well taken, and we will go back and address that situation.
Mr. Chair.
Closing comments? Anyone else that would like to roast Representative Scraba? You brought free lunch, but that doesn't give you a free pass.
Mr. Chair.
Closing comments.
Yes. Also, I want to, before I brought anything, I made sure the Chair was aware that I was doing it because I didn't want to get anybody twisted or what's going on with is it allowable, isn't, and I just wanted to make sure that it was the proper thing. One of the things I want to close with is this extension of the tax is supported by the community and the whole community as a whole. So I think it's when we get to that level of acceptance, it's easy for me to sit here and say, please support this, and I hope it passes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you both. And I know when I first presented my bill, I was extremely nervous, and I did too bring treats, and thank you for doing that. So the Chair renews his motion that House File 124 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The bill is so moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All right. Next, Friday, March 3rd, from 10:30 to noon, we will, I think it's in the basement downstairs. Yeah, exactly. Hopefully we can make it back up. So, anything else? Seeing none, we are adjourned.